You're listening to a download from North Sound 2. Listen again. Stained Glass Radio. 1035 medium wave. North Sound 2.
Welcome to Stained Glass Radio. How are you tonight? Suitably refreshed after a tranquil weekend, I hope. Well, on the show tonight, we've got the usual features, of course, Stained Glass Radio news, the What's On info, and our thought for the week. This week comes from the Reverend Marcus from Woodside Parish Church. And tonight on the show, our guest is someone who grew up in an observant Jewish family and enjoyed the incredibly rich Jewish culture, you know, the festivals, the teaching, the food, until she began to wonder if there was something to this man called Jesus that she was missing. Well, she got hold of a Bible, one that does have a New Testament, and read John's Gospel, and the rest is history. She's now a Christian author and broadcaster, married to a Church of England minister, and she has a uniquely Jewish way of looking at Christianity. Author and broadcaster Michelle Guinness joins us tonight as our studio guest and tells us about the transition into her new faith and what made her take that step.
Stained Glass Radio, 1035 medium wave, North Sound 2.
Time to go for our thought for the week. And this week, it's brought to us by the Reverend Marcus from Woodside Parish Church.
Yeah, good evening, friends in Christ. I may have shared that with you before, but it's always good sometimes to hear things again. And it's called All His Love for You. And as I go through it, remember that you is spelled in the capital U. So the large you, all his love for you. Before you were thought of or time had begun, God stuck you in the name of his Son. And each time you pray, you'll see it's true. You can't spell out Jesus and not include you. You are a pretty big part of his wonderful name. For you he was born. That's why he came. And his great love for you is the reason he died. It even takes you to spell crucified. Isn't it thrilling and splendidly grand? He rose from the dead with you in his plan. The stone split away. The gold trumpet blew, and this word, resurrection, is spelled with a U. When Jesus left earth at his upward ascension, he felt there was one thing he just had to mention. Go into the world and tell them it's true, that I love them just like I love you. So many great people are spelled with a U. Don't they have a right to know Jesus too? It all depends now on what you will do. He'd like them to know, but it all starts with you. So will you pass it on? When Jesus died on the cross, he was thinking of you.
Stained Glass Radio, 1035 medium wave, North Sound 2.
Well, in just a minute, Stained Glass Radio news. But before that, I don't know whether you've come across the latest in electric cars. This fascinates me, you know. It's called the Smart 4-2 electric drive, and it's got a range of all of 63 miles. Yeah, it's not great, is it? That's what lets electric cars down, isn't it? 63 miles range isn't terribly much. I mean, it's okay for around town, but if you're going in your holidays, you might be a bit stuck. But they've got around that, and they get around it by supplying a trailer with extra batteries in it. So all you do is hitch this to the back of your car. Unfortunately, it's about half the size of the car, but never mind. It gets you a greater range. They don't actually say what that is, though. I did look, and they don't give the figure, but substantially increased range, I think. You can also get several attachments to go with the car that go in this trailer. For example, you can change it into a pizza delivery vehicle by adding the correct attachment. And you can have an oven in this trailer to keep your pizzas warm. A third attachment, which I think is particularly interesting, loudspeakers and an amplifier, and you can turn it into a mobile DJ unit. And they said using a mobile phone behind the wheel was dangerous. I don't know. Most people in Britain want to keep the current definition of marriage unchanged, according to a new survey. The survey showed that 7 out of 10 people agree that marriage should remain a lifelong exclusive commitment between a man and a woman. It also revealed that 84% of respondents agreed that children have the best chance in life if raised by their own mother and father in a stable, committed relationship. The Comres poll was commissioned by Catholic Voices. It showed that 59% support the recognition of same-sex unions through the civil partnership scheme, which already grants couples all the legal rights of marriage. The online survey, which was conducted last month, was based on the responses of 2004 adults. The results come as the Westminster government prepares to launch a consultation asking how, not whether, marriage should be redefined. A petition seeking to protect the current definition of marriage has attracted more than 100,000 signatures in its first 2 weeks. It's being run by the Coalition for Marriage. Last month, homosexual celebrity Christopher Biggins said he was happy with civil partnerships but does not want to redefine marriage because, quote, we just can't get rid of everything. Militant Islamist group Boko Haram has declared war on Christians in Nigeria, saying that they are planning coordinated attacks to eradicate Christians from certain parts of the country. A spokesman for the group, which has stepped up its violent campaign against Christians in the north since Christmas, said, "We will create so much effort to end the Christian presence in our push to have a proper Islamic state that the Christians won't be able to stay." Following a series of attacks on churches and other targets in 5 states over Christmas that left more than 40 people dead, the group on New Year's Day issued a 3-day deadline for Christians to leave the north. Unrelenting attacks have ensued, including the bombing of a number of churches and on individual Christians. More recently, on 26 February, a suicide bomber drove a car into the grounds of the Church of Christ headquarters in Jos. The vehicle exploded 3 metres from the church building. 2 women and an 18-month-old child were killed and around 50 people were injured. The violence is having the intended effect of driving Christians from the north. Nearly 90% of the Christians have left Yobe State, where 20 churches have been torched and many lives have been lost. Boko Haram has killed around 1,000 people since 2009 in its bloody campaign to establish an Islamic state in northern Nigeria. As well as attacking Christians, the group targets police, security forces and politicians, and also Muslim leaders who oppose its agenda. Over 300 people have been killed so far this year. A highly controversial mobile euthanasia program launched in the Netherlands this week sent 6 specialist roving medical teams door-to-door to help patients end their lives free of charge in their own homes. The project, which has provoked sharp criticism from doctors, is the brainchild of the Dutch largely donor-funded Right to Die Netherlands. It followed the government's 2002 decision to legalize euthanasia, making the Netherlands the first country in the world to do so. Valburg de Jong, a spokeswoman for the organization, said that since the ruling, some 3,100 assisted suicides had been carried out annually. The mobile euthanasia teams, she said, operated free of charge and were designed to make it easier for patients enduring interminable suffering to end their lives. The organization stressed that its mobile units were comprised of doctors and nurses specially trained in performing assisted suicide at its clinic. It said that the procedure involved injecting the patient first with a sleep-inducing drug and then with barbiturates to stop heart and lung function. However, the concept met with criticism from the Royal Dutch Society of Doctors, which represents 53,000 physicians and medical students. It said it seriously doubted whether the euthanasia team's mobile doctors could form a close enough relationship with the patients to decide whether assisted suicide should be carried out. But Edith Schippers, the Dutch health minister, insisted that mobile euthanasia was in line with the government's 2002 decision to legalize assisted suicide and that she was confident that the new program would comply fully with the strict guidelines. And finally, 90-year-old Harold Camping created a stir last year when he said that the world would be coming to a disastrous end on May 21st, 2011. Some people spent their life savings in preparation for the purported day of reckoning, while others simply laughed him off. When the event didn't come to pass, Camping doubled down, saying that his estimates were off and that the end times would come instead on October 21st. Again, he was wrong. Following the insanity and false predictions in November, the Blaze News reported about a half-hearted apology that the leader offered. Now, Camping has come forward to fully admit his, quote, sin, and to say that he will no longer be making doomsday predictions. In essence, this was the first true apology offered, it seems, to those who believed his predictions would come to pass. Additionally, the text claims that God has humbled the company through the events of May 21st. Stained Glass Radio News. Well, he may have been wrong twice last year, but it's going to happen sometime, right? Keep watching the sky.
Stained Glass Radio, 1035 medium wave, North Sound 2.
Our guest tonight was brought up in a practicing Jewish family, but is now a Christian and married to a Church of England minister who's the great-great-grandson of the famed brewer Arthur Guinness. She worked for many years as a presenter, researcher and writer for national TV and radio. And for 2 years, she presented her own three-hour daily lunchtime programme on BBC Local Radio in Coventry. She's worked as head of communications for the NHS in Cumbria and Lancashire and in charities and health authorities. But for some years now, her career has been centred around writing, training and speaking. She contributes to a number of magazines and has written 11 books, mostly from her uniquely Jewish perspective. She's also written a biography of the Guinness family, Genius of Guinness, telling the story of her husband's famous brewing, banking and missionary ancestors. And she had a speaking engagement at Fetter Esso Church in Stonehaven during the week. We're delighted that she's taken the time to drop in to speak to us at North Sound 2. Michelle Guinness, thank you for coming in and welcome to Stained Glass Radio.
Thank you. It's just wonderful to be back in Scotland. I just love this place.
Michelle, tell us about your early family life in a Jewish family. Was it a very devout Jewish family?
Not particularly. It was Orthodox and practicing, but not the ultra Orthodox. I mean, you have this picture, don't you, of the Jewish people who go around with the tall hats and the long curly bits,
yes,
and the funny coats. But it wasn't like that at all. We were very assimilated. I was brought up in Geordieland. They'd say that we're Scots people with our brains bashed in.
It's
and...
very unkind.
Well, I don't know. I feel quite proud of the fact. And yeah, I was brought up with all the festivals and the traditions. I mean, our earliest memories are my mother lighting her Sabbath candles on a Friday night.
So you did all the festivals?
We did. My dad was a doctor, and if he was late for Sabbath, my mother would be furious. I mean, she'd watch the patients queuing. In those days, there was a queuing system. She'd watch the patients queuing outside the door, waiting, and she'd think they'd do it deliberately to spite her on a Friday night. But it was just magical. You know, she used to pray, and my mother was not a praying woman. My father was an agnostic, actually, though Jewish. He'd fought in the war and had a lot of difficulty believing in God at all. And yet the rituals mattered enormously. But my mother would pray, and we'd say, "What are you praying for, Mum?" And she'd say that God would send you good spouses. And so now, you know, when she complains that I'm married to a vicar, I tell her she just didn't pray hard enough.
So your father Jewish, but he observed all the festivals, but there was some question about whether he actually believed in God.
Yes, I think that's true for a number of sort of practicing Jews who are not ultra-Orthodox. There's a huge range of belief within Judaism. Mm-hmm. But for an awful lot of Jewish people, Jewishness or Yiddishkeit is what matters, a whole feel for a Jewish way of life, not necessarily belief. And that's how they bring up their children, very much to have a feel for a Jewish way of life with wonderful rituals and colour and good food.
Well,
and,
yes.
You know, a lot of practices around the table, a lot of storytelling and drama and candlelight and wine.
There's
and,
a tremendous richness about the Jewish tradition.
Oh, terrific. It's wonderful.
So when how did you come into contact with Christianity?
It was at school. And I think I was going through a phase where I kind of sort of believed in God, but I wasn't very sure. I mean, I remember sitting at the Passover and thinking, You know, who is this God who for generations has watched over us and spared us? And you thank God for the fact that you have been spared. And then, you know, as a child, though, I was brought up to hear all about the Holocaust. And I knew that because I was not there, I existed. Because my parents were not there, I existed. Now, why did I exist? And who was this God that had spared my family but not others? Mm-hmm. And that was a huge question for me. I mean, I loved the story of God's faithfulness to the Jewish people in the Exodus and the way we were, you know. And actually, every Jewish festival is not just you go through the rituals. You go through them as if you were there. So my grandfather used to say, we made bricks, it was awful, oi, we suffered. And I really thought he had been there. And so, you know, but I wanted to know who was this God that was behind all of that. And I kind of, I didn't really have much notion of Jesus at all. And I, as a child, was splashed with muddy water from puddles and told I'd killed him. And so I kind of was intrigued. And when this group of Christian girls at my school started to talk to me about Christianity, I thought, well, can't do me any harm to know a bit more.
Yes, it's, this tremendous anti-Semitism runs through society, and children at school pick this up, and they can be very cruel, can't they? I mean, that must have been awful.
Well, I don't know that it was. I was just intrigued. I couldn't remember having killed anyone. So I thought at least I can find out who it is I'm supposed to have killed.
And your Jewish festivals clearly connected you quite firmly to God, unlike Christian festivals like Christmas and Easter, where people barely think of God at all.
And this has been terribly important in my life, that I was brought up with a feel for a Jewish way of life, that I might grow into Judaism. Mm-hmm. Or grow into faith.
Yes.
And the challenge to me is, do we give children today a feel for any way of life? You know, do I give my children a feel for a Christian way of life, that in the fullness of time they will grow into faith?
Yes.
Because I think it's life transforming and enhancing.
Well, indeed. I mean, if there is a God, your children ought to know about him and know who he is, that's for sure. Sorry, going back a step, just when you were talking to your friends, or your friends were talking to you about Christianity, you said it can't do any harm to find out more about this. So did you go along to church with them?
I did once or twice, and I found it so culturally alien. I mean, I was all dressed up for the Jewish disco, wearing a skirt that was more of a belt, and, you know, it had a little glitzy number on, and a PVC Mac that squeaked in the silence. And I had dusty Springfield eyes. You know, my false eyelashes were so big I could hardly open them. And I really did feel like a pork sausage at a bar mitzvah. I thought, I really don't fit in this place. But the key for me, I mean, they were very warm in their welcome, the people, and that was important. But the key was when this friend of mine said, well, why don't you read the New Testament? You've read the Old. I didn't like to tell her. I'd been 4 years at Hebrew classes, learning ancient Hebrew, and all we'd ever done was translation practice. And in those 4 years, the children of Israel had got into the wilderness, but they'd never got out. Mm-hmm. You know, it took us so long. And I thought, well, that must do. That'll count. And so I started to read the New Testament. I didn't know where to find a Bible. I knew we had one at home somewhere, because I remember going into a shop to buy one and my mother saying to the shopkeeper, do you have any of these books without the end bit? She wanted one without the New Testament. And he said, madam, they don't come without the end bit. So where was it? And I found it on my parents' bookshelves, amongst their forbidden books, my mother's Harold Robbins and my father's Lady Chatterley's Lover. And I took Lady Chatterley's Lover and the Bible back to my bedroom and read them by torchlight under the bedclothes. I shared a room with my little sister and it was lights off. And if I'd been found with two forbidden books, I really would have been in big trouble.
So at what point was it you decided, yep, this is for me?
Well, I had Lady Chatterley on one side, and I was reading John's Gospel with some notes that had been given to me, a little booklet by this friend. And there was nothing in Lady Chatterley I didn't know already, precocious little wretch that I was at 17. But John's Gospel was a revelation. I mean, I was just absolutely bowled over by the person of Jesus. Mm. Imagine you know nothing about him. And you are looking for a role model. You're looking for somebody who is with complete integrity, with humanity, with you're looking for somebody who I mean, I wanted life. And my mother sadly had developed OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. And spent all her days straightening ornaments. And I thought, dear God, there's got to be more to life than that. And if it is, where is it? And he was a man who promised life, eternal life, life after death. My goodness. These were all the things I dreamt of and didn't think were possible. And to have somebody say these were certainties. And I thought either this man is a lunatic or else this man is truth.
Telling the truth.
Yes. And I have to make that decision.
Yes.
And so, I think by the end of reading John's Gospel, I just thought, I just cannot believe he is any other than who he says he is.
So did it click that this is the Messiah that the Jews are waiting for?
It clicked with me. We did a trip from school to the York Mystery Plays. And at the moment, it was twilight. And there's absolute silence in the castle grounds. And you hear the banging of the nails into the cross. And it echoes right through the grounds. And the cross is lifted up and Jesus is on the cross. And as he hung there with his arm stretched out, I saw it. I don't know how, but I did. He was the bridge between all that I'd been brought up with and all the potential he was offering me.
Yes.
And I think at that moment for me, I thought, heck, Ethan, what do I do now? Because I knew enough that he was that if we follow him, we had to give up everything else. And I thought, that's my family. That's my community. That's everything I've ever known. And being Jewish, I bartered. I said to him, okay, I'll do it, but here's the deal. You promise life in all its fullness. I give you my life and everything I am. But that's what I want from you. I want life in all its fullness, every minute of my life that I live.
And yet it's so not true that you have to give up everything that you've known, because the Christian faith is the Jewish faith with a bit added on. So really, that there shouldn't be, it shouldn't be this radical change and you forget everything you've done in the past, should it?
It shouldn't at all. I mean, being a Christian should be the most Jewish thing anybody can
do. Exactly. Our Jewish Messiah.
Yeah, absolutely. Although even
Yeshua HaMashiach.
Just even last week, though, one of the young people in the youth group I lead said to me, was Jesus Jewish or was he a Christian? What?
I've heard arguments over that. You know, some people say he's a Southern Baptist and other people say, well, no, he was a Catholic, like
his
mum.
No, actually, he was Church of England. No, absolutely not. I mean, he was Jewish through and through. And for me as a Jew, I recognised that the minute I read about him. I didn't ever think of him as being Jewish till I read, but I knew in everything he said. This man knew. I mean, he knew all of the Old Testament scriptures by heart. They were part of the fibre of his being. But of
he
course,
was a Jewish rabbi.
Absolutely, but of course, but of course, my mother and father didn't see it quite like that.
No. Did you get much opposition from your parents?
They were brokenhearted. Absolutely brokenhearted. It was the greatest betrayal I could have done, you know. And I think for my mother, the greatest worry was that I would marry out. Mm. She'd never see me married under the canopy. Mm. And of course, that proved true. And he was a vicar as well. Well, he wasn't when I married him. He became one, though.
Well, what about this Christian faith that you had then, Michelle? What sort of Christian faith was it? Did it incorporate the Jewish festivals or did you just split from them completely?
For a little while, I split. First of all, I think the church I was in had no awareness of how important
as
my
many,
Jewish
as
background.
Is the case with many churches.
No, I'd sit in, you know, I'd sit in study groups, and I'd hear people talking about Bible passages that I understood, and I knew they didn't. You know, where two or three are gathered together, there am I in the midst. Jesus said, "Well, I knew for a fact you can't ratify a prayer meeting within Judaism." On any occasion, unless 10 men are present. And I knew exactly here what Jesus
what he was
saying.
Yeah.
And I used to say these things, you know, and people would look at me like I was balmy. And I, of course, culturally, I was terribly Jewish. You know, I was much more, you know, they were all terribly nice. And I was a bit kind of in-your-face New York, I suppose. And I said things and I was very emotional. And I kind of didn't feel I fitted and tried to fit it in for a while. until I got married and I had children, at which point Peter began to say, you know, darling, some of the stuff you know from your background is so relevant to the church. We've got to start looking into this. And we started doing Sabbath nights with our kids because I wanted to give them a feel for a
Great.
Jewish Christian way
Great.
Of life.
Yeah.
And we had bread and wine on a Friday night and discussed theology. And as they grew older, they brought in their friends. And they were supposed to be going out to the pub. Most of them never got there. You know, we'd have such fascinating discussions. All they ever wanted to do was sit around our table and talk on a Friday night with the candles and beautiful food, and you know, I'd make a real occasion of it, and we'd tell stories.
Were you never
weak? And
were you never tempted, Michelle, to become what they call a Messianic Jew? In other words, our listeners will be familiar with that because we've had many guests who have been Messianic Jews who are, although they accept Jesus Christ, have all the ritual and all the richness and they follow all the festivals of the Jewish faith. But they accept Jesus Christ. Were you never tempted to do that?
No, I wasn't. And I came to a point where I looked at my life and I thought, I'm married to somebody who isn't Jewish, who's passionate mm-hmm. about the Jewish roots. But I really realized that I identified with the Apostle Paul called to the Gentiles. And that was always my calling. I mean, I'm married to a minister anyway. I'm firmly. That was a shock to my system when he got the call to the Church of England. My goodness me. Uh-huh. You know, a life in purple crimpoline, I thought, as a vicar's wife. And I really felt what God had called me to do was bring the whole of my Jewishness into the Gentile church and kind of open up the whole area of celebration and colour and symbol and wonder and laughter and fun.
So your mission was to be Jewish within the Christian church and to introduce other people to it.
Oh, I think to reinvent for folk, to reconstruct for many people their image of God as a killjoy and an authoritarian schoolmaster, and to show them how this was a God of the party. I mean, in the Old Testament, there are so many times when we're told to rejoice. And actually, the Hebrew word is sameach. And the Jews talk about simcha. We're having a simcha. We're having a party. Where God actually says to his people, come on and party with me. And I looked at the church and I didn't see much party. I saw a lot of misery, a bit of gloom and despondency. But it's changed a lot, I have to say,
yes,
since
it
those
is changing.
Days.
Yeah.
But I like to think that some of it is because, you know, he's saying to folk, well, we can have Passovers and we can integrate. This is the other thing. You don't have to be spiritual one minute and not the next, but we can integrate fun into our faith.
Yes.
And that for me was the great passion. And then reconstruct their image of Jesus too as a party goer. How many bottles of wine did he make at the wedding of Cana in Galilee?
Exactly.
And somebody who just loved, even on the way to the cross, having one last party. And when he appeared in his resurrection body, what did he do? He made a Barbie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they knew it was him. They were on the beach.
Yes.
They recognized him because he'd done it before many
Absolutely.
Times.
What about the Jewish people today then, Michelle? I mean, we've got a terrible tendency in the church today, and the Church of Scotland is particularly bad for this. Although thankfully there are exceptions even there, to say, well, the Jews were God's chosen people and they blew it and the church is now God's chosen people. How do you as a Jewish Christian see the Jewish people's current situation, current relationship with God?
I think if God has abandoned them, then we cannot rely on the faithfulness of God because he made promises, and when he makes promises, he fulfills them. So I see that I do see Israel as the fulfillment of promise, but I don't see the current political Israel as the fulfillment. I think there's an awful lot of stuff goes on there, government and political wise, that really upsets me enormously, because they have the potential to live differently and can't see it at the moment. And particularly, I'd love to see much more going out in reconciliation to the Palestinian people.
Tremendous hope there is, though, for the Jewish people, isn't there? Because of what the Bible says.
Absolutely.
All of Israel will be saved, says Paul.
Well, there's an awful lot going on in Israel, too, behind the scenes that is so exciting, where the Messianic churches are going out to the Palestinian churches and, when necessary, filling up wagons of food and taking it to them. So there's a huge amount going on, and there's huge potential for the future. But at the same time, I do see very strongly that God has loved the Gentile peoples and wanted to bring them in. And so we stand together as the two olive trees.
Yes, we do. We are supposed we are supposed to arouse the Jews to jealousy. We're not doing a terribly good job of it.
Well, I'm waiting. I'm waiting for the day my mother says to me, oh, do you know, I've got to go to church because they've got so much going for them.
Oh, that would be wonderful, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's Michelle, the challenge, though, and it's a great challenge.
Michelle, we haven't mentioned your books. You've written 11 books, and are you writing another one at the moment, or what was your latest one? Tell us about your latest one.
My last two, really, because they go together. One was something called The Word of the Wives that I wrote with my daughter, Abby, who's an actress.
That's about the women of the Bible, yes.
The unseen and unheard voices. Predominantly, they're wags, they're wives and girlfriends of the heroes of the Bible. And they're the women who had to put up with them. And they tell their story. And it's great. It's 28 monologues, so anybody can perform them or read them in their churches. And you meet all sorts of women like Mrs. Noah and Mrs. Caiaphas and a whole raft of women you might not have thought of before. And the one before that was a book called Autumn Leave. We got leave being our sabbatical. We had 3 months in France. We bought a house for our retirement there, more fool us. And we had quite a battle legally. So it's a bit of a detective story. Who was trying to shaft us and would they succeed?
Right.
And also getting to know the French church and the French people. I mean, you meet a raft of really funny characters.
Yes, that must be very interesting. Buying a property in France and it trying to integrate into the society as well as incomers.
Did you find them very accepting?
Yeah. Were they?
Oh, yes, definitely. I mean, I kept a journal because, I mean, I didn't plan to because I knew so many people had kept a journal about living in France. But it just got funnier and funnier. And I thought, I've just got to write this stuff down and also reflect on what God was saying to us during that time, because it was quite scary realizing we were so close to losing every penny or every euro we had invested of our retirement money. And so it was quite a nerve-wracking time. But the local people were great. They did accept us. But we were the first English in our village.
Right.
And we really came to love the people there.
So your two books, those two books you mentioned again, Autumn Leave and the other one?
Word of the Wives.
Word of the Wives. Books to look out for. And obviously, I know you do have a website and people can go to your website, can't they, and find out about these books?
They can. It's www.michelleguinness. Michelle's got one L and two N's in Guinness, which people always forget, .co.uk.
Or if you're in any doubt, just Google it and your webpage will come up.
But the one that I really, that reflects what we've been saying today is called The Heavenly Party. There's lots of ideas in there for fun at home, round the table, with your family, with your home group, with your church, lots of rich, colourful traditions and festivals and both
the
Celtic and Jewish and all sorts in there to help you to get going and start to have some fabulous parties.
That sounds terrific. The Heavenly Party is another book to look out for. And obviously you'll be able to get those either, can you buy them through your website or is it an Amazon?
You'd have to go to Amazon or a good bookshop will order it for you.
That's excellent. Books to look out for from Michelle Guinness. Thank you so much for coming in today to talk to us on Stained Glass Radio. Author and broadcaster Michelle Guinness, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Stained Glass Radio, 1035 medium wave, North Sound 2.
Thanks tonight go to Michelle Guinness for joining us and telling us about her transition of faith from Judaism to Christianity and everything that went with that. And you can take a look at her website at www.michelleguinness.co.uk. Michelle spelled with one L and two N's in Guinness, so don't forget that, as she said. And her books, of course, are definitely worth checking up on by the looks of things. The Word of the Wives, The Heavenly Party, which she mentioned, and Autumn Leave are books to look out for by Michelle Guinness. And you can find the details, as we said, on Michelle's website. And let's take a look at the What's On information in association with the Aberdeen Christian Diary, which is on the web at www.the-abcd.org.uk. this coming Tuesday the 13th, mission-shaped intro, 7:30 until 9 p.m. at St. Devenick's Church Hall, 2 Baileys Wells Road, Bealtown, Aberdeen, AB159AP, reimagining the church leadership and discipleship. It's the fifth of six fortnightly Tuesday evenings to rediscover mission and reimagine church, it says, led by Jerry and Joe Bowyer. And for more information, contact the Reverend Paul Watson on 01224-861-552 or email paulrobertwatson@googlemail.com. Also on Tuesday 13th, the life and faith of the Puritan Sarah Edwards, 7:30 p.m. at Deeside Christian Fellowship Church, Bing Hill Drive, Mill Timber, AB130JE. Women's evening meeting with worship, light refreshments and fellowship, and the theme is In Trouble and In Joy. Speaker is Sharon James, and for more information contact Elizabeth McQuaid on 01224-739-885. Wednesday the 14th, and it's the fifth Partners in the Gospel Conference, Your Kingdom Come, 9:30 a.m. until 4:30 p.m. at Deeside Christian Fellowship Church, Bing Hill Drive, Mill Timber, AB130JE. Keynote speaker is Dr. Andy Gemmell, focusing on preaching from the Gospels. Choice of workshops and seminars with Edward Lobb, Andy Gemmell, and Sharon James. The conference fee is £15. Booking is essential. And also, there's an open evening meeting with Edward Lobb in Gilcomson South Church, and we'll be highlighting that in just a second. Contact is Anita Talbot, 01224-733-979, or email info@partnersinthegospel.org.uk. And that evening meeting with Edward Lobb at 7:30 p.m. on Wednesday the 14th, Gilcomson South Church, Union Street, Aberdeen. Interview, praise and Bible teaching. Meeting is free and open to all and follows the Partners in the Gospel Day Conference at Mill Timber. The contact is Anita Talbot. Again, her telephone number 01224-733-979. Friday the 16th and the Aberdeen Passion Quiz Night, 7 p.m. at the Bridge of Dawn Baptist Church Centre, Dubford Road, Bridge of Dawn, Aberdeen, AB238GS. This is to raise funds for the Aberdeen Passion at the AECC over the Easter weekend. Teams of 6 to 8 people either made up on the night or come along in a team. The tickets are £5 per person and they're available from quiz@aberdeenpassion.com or 01224-826-256. And looking forward a little to Monday the 19th, Scotland for Marriage is having a meeting at 7:30 p.m. St. Columbus Church, Brayhead Way, Bridge of Dawn, Aberdeen, AB22 8RR, a joint meeting of the Christian Institute Care and the Evangelical Alliance in support of the Scotland for Marriage campaign. Come and hear what practical steps you can take to defend marriage as the union of one man and one woman. Louis Kinsey is the contact. Telephone number 01224-825-653. Mobile 07787-145918 or email louis.kinsey@gmail.com. That's it for the What's On information. Anything you'd like to be included, it's Stained Glass Radio at northsound2.com. And thanks for being with us in Stained Glass Radio tonight.
Stained Glass Radio, 1035 medium wave, North Sound 2. Listen again to what you've missed and access exclusive online only content at northsound2.com.